Okay, thanks very much to the organizers for the opportunity to speak. My talk is going to be entirely theoretical, and I'm going to give an overview of some of the current status of the study of black hole microstates in string theory based on these papers with the collaborators you see here. Brief outline, I'm going to give some motivation and some background, and then talk about both supersymmetric and non-supersymmetric black hole microstates in string theory, and then make some brief comments about extracting some universal features of the kind of structure we see for more phenomenological purposes. So as many of you know, the information paradox arises when we study field theory on the background of a classical black hole metric. The region around the horizon is completely the local vacuum state after the black hole has settled down in the classical description. And the Hawking pair creation process leads to the creation of entangled pairs of particles that arise in the vacuum region. And this leads to a growing entanglement between the black hole and its surroundings. This is a problem for quantum mechanics. If the black hole was formed from a pure state, then we get this ever-rising entanglement between the black hole and its radiation. And that's completely different to what we would get from a normal unitary quantum evolution. It was recently shown that these conclusions are robust, including arbitrary small local corrections to this process. And this led to a resurgence of interest in the problem, in particular with regard to the physics of an informing observer. The Bekenstein-Hawking entropy of a black hole suggests that there's an exponential degeneracy of microstates of that compact object. So we can ask whether the physics of individual microstates can modify this conclusion, Hawking's calculation. In the 60s and 70s, there were many searches for black hole hair, which would have been some deformations at the horizon that would carry the entropy of the black hole. And in classical gravity, this program failed and instead resulted in many elegant no-hair theorems. However, in string theory, we find examples of quantum hair for black holes, which suggests that quantum effects are important at the would-be horizon due to the fact that bound states in string theory have non-trivial size. And this is known as the Fussball conjecture. A brief overview of the status of this conjecture. For small supersymmetric black holes, this is very well established by now. We have a complete understanding of the microstates of these black holes. However, these black holes are not just supersymmetric, they're also microscopic in size. They're string scale sized. For large macroscopic supersymmetric black holes, there's been a large amount of work on this, and there's a growing body of evidence that we also have effects on the scale of the horizon, but this is not yet established. For large finite temperature black holes, there's been somewhat less work because this is technically harder, although there's been some recent progress in this direction. So as was noted yesterday, for mergers of neutral rotating black holes in the sky, data is definitely ahead of theory in this regard. However, there's a clear mechanism in string theory for this horizon scale structure, and one can attempt to extract universal features to address phenomenological questions. So despite all this progress, a lot of open questions remain and remained until a year or so ago. In particular, can one construct and study many black hole microstate solutions which have large near-horizon throats, so they really look like the black hole until very close to the horizon, and arbitrary values of the angular momenta? Secondly, can one identify the holographic description of these solutions to really understand which microstate of a black hole we're talking about? Thirdly, which fraction of black hole microstates can be described within the supergravity limit of string theory, where we have more tools to address these questions, and which fraction are actually inherently stringy in nature? These questions are key to understanding more typical states of large supersymmetric black holes. Next, what is the gravitational description of non-extremal black hole microstates? That's a general question that is open at the moment. And then if there is this new physics at the horizon, then what is the experience of an infalling observer, and what are the implications for phenomenology? So I'm going to first talk about supersymmetric black holes, where we have more control, we have more tools to study these black holes, focusing on large black holes. Now, I'm aware not everybody, far from everybody in the audience, is a string theorist, so just some very brief introduction to the kind of black holes I'm interested in this talk. We'll think about type 2B string theory, which is formulated in 10 dimensions of space-time, compactified on a four torus and a circle. So this four torus is microscopic in size. The circle is taken to be macroscopic in size, and the coordinate y will denote that direction. And the remaining directions are asymptotically 4 plus 1 Minkowski space. We want to make a compact, heavy bound state in this theory, and we can do so by taking a large number of D1 brains wrapped around the S1 direction, N5 D5 brains wrapped around all of the compact directions. And so from the point of view of the space-time directions, these are all very compact point-like objects a priori. We'll also put NP units of momentum along the circle. And for states which have geometrical descriptions, the geometry will have charges proportional to the number of 1, 5, and a momentum. So these are not astrophysically realistic black holes, but they're black holes where we can study a lot of their features. In particular, we can look in the supersymmetric. Sorry,
How do we know it's supersymmetric?
So there are both supersymmetric and non-supersymmetric black holes in this system.
Okay.
So if we consider the lowest energy states with these charges, then we'll have supersymmetric states, but we can also give an excitation energy above that extremality, and we can study non-extremal.
And the charges will be different if it's not supersymmetric? I'm just wondering, what would qualitatively differ?
You can keep the charges fixed, but just add mass above the BPS bound. So for supersymmetric states, the mass is just the sum of these three charges. Otherwise, you can have non-extremal black holes. So it's interesting to consider the supersymmetric and near-supersymmetric regime within the system, because we can study holography in this setup, and that gives us a lot of control. So we can do that by taking the Y circle to be the largest scale in the problem. And then the structure of the geometry is that we have these flat asymptotics. We now have an extremal or near extremal black hole, so we have this ADS near horizon throat. And then we have the details of the microstructure of the solution deep inside the throat. So in full, this throat is locally ADS3 times S3 times T4, and this is one of the original examples of holography. So in a bit more detail, the supersymmetric black holes in this system have a near horizon geometry that is S3 fibered over the extremal BTZ black hole, which has both a near horizon ADS3 region and also a further very near horizon region, which is naturally thought of as S1 fibered over ADS2. So when we're below this radius rho star, this Y circle stabilizes in size, and we have this ADS2 throat. And we would like to reproduce this throat from constructions of black hole microstates. The angular momentum of these black holes is bounded above by the charges. So we have this combination of the product of the three charges with a square root, which is the upper bound on the angular momentum, J left. And previous examples which had large ADS2 throats were restricted to relatively high values of the angular momentum, so around about 85% of the maximal amount. And this holographic description of these solutions is actually still not known. So the solutions I'll show you in a moment have large ADS2 throats, probe the entire range of values of J left, and we give a holographic proposal, a proposal for the holographic description of the solutions. The qualitative features of these solutions are that they break the isometries of the classical black hole that we're trying to describe. And this gives us a lot of degrees of freedom to describe a lot of entropy of the black hole. They're parameterized by three integer parameters, positive integers, which parameterize a general phase. So V is a null combination of time and the Y circle coordinate, and psi and phi are angles on the S3. And this phase describes the breaking of the isometries within the tensor fields, within the matter fields that support the configuration. There's also a continuous parameter, B of A, which controls the amount of momentum charge and angular momentum of the solutions. It turns out that there's a particular family of these solutions where, even though the isometries are broken by the matter fields, the metric itself is actually completely independent of this phase. It preserves the isometries. And so the dependence is only through the matter fields. The structure of these solutions is then that we have these ADS3 times S3 asymptotics going over into this very near horizon BTZ throat, and all of the microstructure of the solutions is deep inside the throat, as you would want for typical black hole microstates. And we have an explicit proposal for the corresponding family of states in the dual CFT.
Sorry, where does the dual CFT live?
It lives, if you like, at in the UV asymptotic region at the top of the ADS3.
There are two CFTs, actually. There are two CFTs, one is the ADS2, so we have to take the limit and there's an ADS2 CFT, and there's another one which is an ADS3 CFT, so there are two CFTs.
But then this asymptotic will be flat at this construction, or?
So
they're not exact ADSs.
So indeed. So this construction that I've showed you so far is done, so as I showed at the start, there was flat asymptotics going over into an ADS3 times S3. One can take a decoupling limit, where one just goes over into asymptotically ADS3 times S3 solutions. And these solutions were first constructed in this decoupling limit. However, we've also made the asymptotically flat completion, and that will actually appear quite soon.
But then there's no CFT if there is asymptotic.
Right. So the holographic story is when you've taken the decoupling limits.
Okay.
Right. So some comments worth making are that these states are still somewhat atypical within the Hilbert space of black hole microstates. The bulk description of typical microstates remains an open question. However, these are the first family of microstate geometries which have these large near-horizon ADS2 throats, general values of the angular momentum, and identified dual CFT states.
What do you mean by atypical, or why do you say
it? I mean atypical in the sense that they are still somewhat, in the holographic dual CFT, you can see that these states are made up of only two kind of ingredients of states. They're kind of coherent states, which are a large sum of different types of strands, but only of two ingredients. So they're not kind of very typical thermal looking states. They're still somewhat coherent. So there are certainly more typical things than these, although these show a lot of the features that you would like of typical sector states. So there's interesting physics one can ask, given these solutions. In particular, can we solve for the geodesic motion of these solutions? So it's an interesting fact that a one integer parameter family of these solutions has a special property that null geodesic motion is completely integrable. So these solutions have four isometries, the standard conserved quantity, which is always quadratic in velocities, but they also have a hidden symmetry corresponding to an additional quadratic conserved Killing tensor. And another family has integrability only for massless geodesics with a specific angular momentum, and there's lots of further study one can do. Okay, I'm running out of time quite quickly, so I'm going to very quickly skim through the non-supersymmetric work and get hopefully to the end quite quickly. The JMART solutions are the best known family of non-supersymmetric black hole microstates, and they're well known for having an ergo region and an associated ergo region instability. So as Vitor and collaborators showed us, you can derive this by solving the free massless scalar wave equation and finding modes that are regular in the cap, outgoing infinity and growing with time. And using holography, this is understood as a classical enhancement of Hawking radiation. For many years, it was a challenge to try and find generalizations of these solutions. They were somewhat atypical and a relatively small family. But in recent work, we've understood how to construct more general non-supersymmetric microstates. They involve a new system of equations, which involve a nonlinear first layer and a following a set of layers of linear equations. And this enables the construction of much more general families. These families have an interesting topological structure, which is composed of nuts and bolts. So as you may be familiar, in four dimensions, fixed points of U1 isometries that shrink can be either points or two-dimensional surfaces, and these are known respectively as nuts and bolts. In five dimensions, the fixed loci are one-dimensional or three-dimensional, and we'll continue to use the terminology. In this context, the JMART solution has a single bolt. And so the intuition in this new system is that the topology which is introduced in the first layer gives rise to bolts, and this gives the inherent non-extremality of the solutions, whereas the topology in the higher layers gives rise to nuts, which are more extremal or supersymmetric in nature. We've constructed new solutions which have one bolt plus an additional extremal bubble with an extra nut. We have also a kind of partial construction of solutions which have one bolt and arbitrarily many nuts. And to appear hopefully next week, we've constructed new two-bolt solutions which have an interesting parameter space, including near BPS solutions with large ADS3 regions, and also far from extremal solutions which have an arbitrary small charge-to-mass ratio, which is getting towards the astrophysically interesting region in terms of small charge. Yes?
Is it known whether all these bolts always lead to instabilities?
It's a very interesting question, and it's so far completely not studied, the stability of these solutions. The JMART solutions, it's known that how they decay and their instability. One may expect for these solutions similar ergo region type instabilities, but it's expected that there should be somehow a continuous range of possibilities between a kind of very fast ergo region instability and ultimately a much slower Hawking radiation type decay for typical states. So these should be somewhere in between on that kind of continuous line. Okay, some brief remarks then on extracting some universal physics from these solutions, and this will be elaborated on by other speakers, so I'll go quickly. Black hole complementarity was an idea that different observers could have different low energy field theory descriptions of their observations. As originally postulated, this has been argued to be inconsistent, and it was suggested that instead an infalling observer should experience a firewall of Planck scale radiation at the horizon. From a string theory point of view, the question is, if this horizon scale structure is present, then what is the interaction of an infalling observer with these degrees of freedom? With Samir, I developed a conjecture known as Fussball complementarity that for a large set of coarse high energy processes, in particular involving quanta with wavelengths much shorter than the horizon scale, these quanta should effectively experience the smooth traditional empty horizon. To get a sense of what we mean by coarse, consider correlators in Rindler space. The Minkowski vacuum on a t equals zero slice through Rindler space is a thermal ensemble when restricted to the right Rindler wedge. If we consider the right Rindler wedge in a typical pure state of this ensemble, then one can divide correlators into those which are well described by the thermal ensemble and those which are not. Minkowski space is the canonical ensemble, so it accurately describes coarse correlators rather than fine correlators. And this suggests the correct role of the classical black hole metric. So the picture that seems to emerge is that there is a fundamental description in string theory where empty space-time is valid all the way up until very close to the black hole horizon. We don't yet have a calculation of exactly where that vacuum region would extend to. But then at some point at the horizon, you need to take into account string theory degrees of freedom if you want an exact description. But for a large range of processes, there should be an effective description that this physics near the horizon is completely absorptive and the probe should experience the traditional black hole metric. And just to give a sort of sense of how this absorption can come, this was mentioned yesterday briefly. There's an exponential, if you know, assuming this physics is general and that there's an exponential degeneracy of states at the horizon scale, then entropic arguments strongly suggest that these short wavelength quanta should be effectively near perfectly absorbed. The number of final states for the black hole plus the infalling quantum is exponentially larger than the states you started with or for a state with a reflection. Now, for quanta which have wavelengths of order the horizon scale or longer wavelengths, this argument is less strong. And so in principle, a priori, there may be some room for a non-zero reflection coefficient. But it's perhaps natural to expect it to be small. And a question for the theorists is really, can we compute this? And how small is this coefficient? And can it be relevant phenomenologically? So this is unclear, but it's important to make progress on this for phenomenology. So to summarize, we've constructed smooth, horizonless supergravity solutions that have large near-horizon ADS2 throats and general values of the angular momentum. We've identified the holographic descriptions of these solutions. There's new significant progress on constructing non-supersymmetric solutions, including getting towards astrophysically relevant regimes. And this quantum Heron string theory is expected to reproduce the physics of the classical black hole for process involving E much greater than T quanta. There's lots of work to do for the future, in particular with regard to phenomenology, and I'll stop here. Thanks a lot.
Questions? Could you please comment a bit further on the relation between the Edwardian instability and the Hawking radiation? In particular, those solutions, I guess that when they are non-spinning or spinning below a threshold, will not be unstable, but they will still have Hawking radiation.
Yeah, so this is very well understood for the JMARC family of solutions. These actually have a very large amount of rotation. They're actually over-rotating with respect to the black hole regularity bound. And in some sense, the ergo region instability describes how they want to shed that angular momentum. And so if you study this in the dual CFT, you can explicitly see that in the CFT, the state is somewhat atypical and very coherent. And if you use the vertex operator in the CFT that describes Hawking radiation, then you see that exactly the same physical process gets amplified by the coherent atypical nature of the states and gives you this an exact match to the emission from the ergo region in the bulk. So holographically, it's very clear that this is, on a microscopic level, exactly the same physical process, where these atypical states want to emit in an amplified version compared to the Hawking radiation that a thermal, typical pure state would want to emit with. So as I was saying, there should be a continuum of behavior somehow as you go from atypical to typical states, where this instability, this decay, should go from being less kind of atypical and classical towards more and more quantum and Hawking radiation-like.
I think maybe that has to be stressed, that the idea that the ego regions never go away, they're always there, but then they get the Hawking radiation comes from the ego regions, not from, because there are no horizons.
Yeah, so the picture would be that as more and more typical states, as you study more and more typical states, the ergo regions would maybe get smaller in size, maybe several of them, maybe into some kind of microscopic, non-geometrical size. When you have a classical non-supersymmetric supergravity solution with an ergo region, so this is expected to be quite general.
So this argument that you don't have any reflection at high energies, is having the large number of states sufficient to tell you that, that argument holds? For example, you might think that, first of all, it depends on the detailed microscopic properties of the reflection process, whether you can access all of those states if you haven't
absolutely
been doing quantum.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's important that these states are not just they're not just these states at the horizon skies, but indeed that they are accessible in that physical process.
Right.
So you need
they're states of the whole black hole in some sense.
Sure.
The large number.
Yeah.
And so if you have a little particle coming in, it's not really clear that you really have access to those. So it seems like a more detailed question.
Yeah, absolutely. So the idea, this was a very kind of crude first pass at the kind of argument, but the idea would be that through quantum tunneling, one would expect to be able to access a large amount of these states very soon, as soon as the particle is sort of incident on the black hole horizon. And in fact, even that the horizon, as you know, classically the horizon expands out to meet an infalling quantum. And so one expects that is maybe reflecting some quantum tunneling process, which should happen very quickly as the particle is about to be absorbed. So indeed, there is more to demonstrate, and one would like to be more quantitative to show that how that would happen in practice, and of course it's very important that this process is accessible at the scale of the horizon. But the expectation is that's how it should work.
Okay, thanks, Alex. Could you maybe say a little bit more about this going towards the phenomenology and the what will be observed? Is there a clear laid out roadmap of what calculations need to be done before you can go to sort of predictions of what will be seen? Or is it something that you're still needing new ideas and new ways of thinking about how to
I would say a little bit of both. So in particular, one would like to really get into, so as I described, there were sort of, there's more progress on supersymmetric black holes than non-supersymmetric black holes. So in particular, for supersymmetric black holes, we can now get the angular momenta to be arbitrarily small. So we can probe the entire range of values of angular momentum. So the roadmap would definitely be to, with regard to the non-supersymmetric black holes, to not just dial down the charge as we now can, but also dial down the angular momenta to arbitrary values. So the roadmap would, you know, firstly to be to construct non-supersymmetric solutions with arbitrary angular momenta and small charge, and then we can start to ask these more detailed questions about.
And it's known how to do that, it's just no one's done it.
So it's not been done. There are expectations of how one should be able to do it. So in particular, these new solutions that I mentioned that have two bolts of topology, these still have very large angular momenta. But it's known from supersymmetric constructions that if you add more bubbles of topology, or if you break the isometries, then you can get the angular momenta down. So the roadmap would be to take those facts and apply them to this non-extremal constructions, and that would allow us to access the regime of arbitrary small charge and arbitrary angular momentum, and then we can start to ask these questions about more astrophysically relevant black holes. So some of that is sort of, the steps are relatively clear, but some of it will require technical advances that remain to be worked out.
If I'm just calculating it in the formation of black holes, for example, in the very early universe, does it make any difference, for example, to calculating their abundance? Which of these solutions or which of the ensemble of solutions is produced? That is, does it have any effect on the calculation of collapse done classically?
That's an interesting question. I would say not obviously. That it should have an effect, but this is something that hasn't been studied. So one would expect that, you know, the black holes that you would form in the early universe by collapse would you know, the rates would not necessarily be affected by these things. This, in some sense, is an attempt to understand the internal structure of the black holes. So I would say I wouldn't see a reason that they would change like that, but it hasn't been worked out.
Thanks.
Okay, I think we need to move on, so let's...